Chapter 13. What's the matter? Dematerialization, teleportation, and time travel. Dr. Nikolai Kozarev's most astonishing discovery was that stars give off measurable energy from their past, present, and future positions. The energy is the strongest in the current actual position of the star and decreases in a smooth, even curve as you look at either its past or its future position. We do also know there is a very similar effect occurring in quantum physics, though only a handful of scientists seem to understand what is actually going on. Every quantum physicist knows you can look at a subatomic particle and measure it as if it were perfectly solid and stable. But then, when you use other measuring techniques, the particle turns into a wave, and it becomes non-local. This seems to defy our intuition completely, and has led to the so-called uncertainty principle, which is a fancy way of saying, we just don't know what the heck is going on down at the quantum level. Nothing seems to exist in any stable, rational, logical way down there. It's not a particle. It's not a wave. It's something we can never understand. It's both at the same time. Since Einstein proved that space and time are interconnected, particles are not merely spreading out in space when they turn into waves. They are also non-local in time. That means some of the particle now appears in the past, some of it is still there in the present, and some of it has moved into the future. As mind-boggling as this must sound, wave-particle duality has been observed in protons, neutrons, electrons, and even entire atoms. And that's all there is down there. This means everything in the quantum realm pops in and out of existence all the time. We do have all the evidence we need to understand this, but we're just not used to thinking this way. Conventional scientists cannot explain what is going on, and therefore have concluded that the mystery will never be solved. We simply live in a universe of uncertainty. Thankfully, this is not true. There is an answer, as we will see. It just hasn't gotten very popular yet. If this idea of entire atoms dematerializing isn't strange enough, the mystery got even greater in 1999, thanks to Dr. Olaf Nares and his colleagues. Nares and his crew were able to transform a soccer ball-shaped cluster of 60 carbon molecules, known as a fullerene, or buckyball, directly into a wave. This hollow geometric sphere of carbon atoms was first devised by Buckminster Fuller, so it was named after him. Bear in mind that buckyballs are solid objects. They can even be used to store other materials inside of them. Each buckyball has a mass of 720 atomic units, built from 60 different carbon atoms that are tightly bound together. And yet, by simply bumping the buckyball against a wall with a series of tiny slits in it, Nares was able to transform it into a wave, and it popped through more than one slit at the same time. If you and I had this ability, a locked door would never be able to stop us. All we'd have to do is run toward it at top speed and collide with it. As soon as we hit the door, instead of having a terribly painful injury, we'd pop into a wave. Then, as a wave, we would slip through the cracks along one or more of the four sides of the door, only to immediately pop back into our normal solid physical form on the other side. That's what these little geometric objects are doing. This experiment is ridiculously simple, and its full implications have definitely not yet become a part of our common knowledge, even though it was published in the prestigious journal Nature. Then, in 2001, this same group discovered they did not need to slam the buckyballs against a wall. All they needed was laser light, which is coherent light, to transform these solid objects into waves. This was published in Physics Review Letters, a respected science journal. Faced with these paradoxes, some scientists have already started to think the unthinkable. What if these particles are not actually doing something that is seemingly impossible? What if they are simply flip-flopping in and out of a reality where they have some room to stretch out and relax? Because time is not linear. Tim Folger discussed a similar concept in a Discover magazine article from 2007. Some four decades ago, the renowned physicist John Wheeler, then at Princeton, and the late Bryce DeWitt, then at the University of North Carolina, developed an extraordinary equation that provides a possible framework for unifying relativity and quantum mechanics. But the Wheeler-DeWitt equation has always been controversial. One finds that time just disappears from the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, says Carlo Rovelli, a physicist at the University of the Mediterranean in Marseille, France. It may be that the best way to think about quantum reality is to give up the notion of time, that the fundamental description of the universe must be timeless. Ever since relativity and quantum mechanics emerged, dealing with the very large and the very small, scientists have struggled to unify them. Einstein's dream was that ultimately everything would be made from the unified field, meaning there are no protons, no neutrons, no electrons, just rotations of the field itself. The problem, of course, is that these weird time-bending properties of quantum mechanics don't seem to allow us to build a working model like that. However, according to Discover, we may be able to solve all these problems by changing how we think about time. A sizable minority of physicists, Rovelli included, believe that any successful merger of the two great masterpieces of 20th century physics will inevitably describe a universe in which ultimately there is no time. Even better, all the laws, whether Newton's, Einstein's, or the quirky quantum rules, would work equally well if time ran backward. Therefore, these radical new concepts about the nature of time cannot be shot down by skeptics who use science as a weapon. They are already on the verge of being accepted as scientific facts. We don't need time to be linear in order to explain the laws of physics. It is unfortunate that Kozarev's research is not commonly known outside of Russian scientific circles, as it provides dramatic new evidence to help us understand that when the particle turns into a wave, it's still a particle. Only now, it's a particle in time. Dewey Larson and three-dimensional time. In our own reality, time keeps moving forward at a steady rate, barring a few little hiccups and glitches. That's why Einstein assumed it was only one-dimensional. However, if we want to solve the biggest scientific mysteries, all we have to do is allow time to have three dimensions. The idea of anything in nature being one-dimensional is nothing more than a mathematical concept, not unlike the idea that the Earth could be flat. Dr. Dewey Larson built a very successful model of our universe beginning in the 1950s by assuming time has three dimensions, but mainstream scientists wouldn't accept it. Nonetheless, Larson was able to solve many of the greatest quantum physics problems, as well as many perplexing issues in astronomy, with this model. Larson concluded there was a three-dimensional time region, or what I and others now like to call time-space, which is constantly interacting with our own three dimensions of space-time. Larson's other big concept was that the entire universe is formed by nothing more than motion, and what's moving, in my opinion, is the source field. Gravity, electromagnetic energy, and all the other forces normally associated with quantum mechanics are just different ways of talking about the same thing. The entire universe is built from nothing more than fluid-like, swirling vortexes within the source field. Einstein's greatest dream of a unified field was correct. Here's a more technical way of saying the same thing from K. Nehru, a scientist developing Larson's theory. Larson asserts that the atom is without parts, that it is a unit of compound motion, with motion being the basic constituent of the physical universe. This means that both the nucleus and the so-called orbital electrons are non-existent. Secondly, he argues that there is no electrical force either involved in the atomic structure. This, therefore, leaves gravitation and the space-time progression as the only two motions, forces, that operate inside the time region. Based on all the available evidence, gravitation and the space-time progression are the exact same thing, which is ultimately what Larson is saying by concluding that all is motion. It's a very mind-expanding concept to consider that gravity is powering physical matter. That's all there is. Nothing else. Just a flowing vortex within a mysterious force we usually call gravity. Without the flow of gravity doing its work, there would be no matter. At least not anything that was visible in our own space-time. According to Nehru, this same theory, which Larson calls the reciprocal system, also does an excellent job of clarifying astrophysics observations. Besides other things, the concept of coordinate three-dimensional time in the reciprocal system explains and derives the characteristics of supernovae, the white dwarfs, the pulsars, the quasars, the compact X-ray sources, and the cosmic rays, without taking recourse to concepts like degenerate matter, the curvature of space-time, etc. All Einstein's so-called relativistic effects come out in the reciprocal system of the existence of this additional time component. Better yet, Larson predicted the existence of quasars in 1959, even though they weren't officially discovered until 1963 by Martin Schmidt. A computer programmer named Dave Ashley read Larson's books after hearing me talk about them in my videos, and then was brave enough to start a discussion on the James Randi Skeptics Forum about it. Larson's physics makes obsolete the last 100 years or so of conventional wisdom as regards the physics of everything. As such, it is not acceptable to the mainstream scientific communities. It can't get accepted into peer-reviewed journals because it essentially is debunking all of current theory. Larson's model makes a huge number of accurate predictions about atoms, chemicals, spacing between atoms and compounds, and such. The numbers add up. If Larson is right, a whole lot of professors and graduate students are out of a job. There goes the gravy train of government grants. If the underlying physics is really much simpler, it won't take years of painstaking study to get it. It could be taught in high school. So there is a very strong vested interest in maintaining the status quo. Space and time are exact opposites of each other. Larson named his theory the reciprocal system because he felt that space and time were in a perfectly opposite relationship to each other, a reciprocal relationship. Though most people believe space and time couldn't be more different, Larson said that's only because we've been conditioned to think that way. Instead, Larson now invites us to envision a parallel reality all around us, which is just like the space we now see, in almost every way. This parallel reality would have solid objects and livable areas just like our own, made from the same atoms and molecules we see all around us. Our scientists would normally think these atoms exist only as waves in this stage of their existence. Remember, a wave over here is a solid particle over there. We might even enter this parallel reality and walk around in it by certain means we will soon discuss. The only difference is that from our perspective, this parallel reality would all exist in a higher dimension, or more correctly, three parallel dimensions. Theoretically, we are surrounded by this parallel reality, by time-space, right now. It's where the energetic duplicate of our physical body and brain would be found. It's very likely where we go in dreams, out-of-body experiences, remote viewing sessions, or the so-called afterlife. And the main way we can measure this parallel reality is by tracking its effects on the flow of time. One of the most mind-expanding concepts Larson raises is that the space we see around us, the known universe, isn't strictly real at all. The parallel reality of time-space isn't actually real either. The only thing that does genuinely exist is the three real dimensions that they both are a part of. Within these three real dimensions, energy constantly flows between the two realities so they can both continue to exist. Technically, Larson would call this motion, not energy, but I believe we are still talking about the same thing. Simply put, all the energy that makes space in our reality is the same energy that powers time in the parallel reality. And all the energy that makes space in the parallel reality is the energy that powers time in our reality. Although this seems totally impossible to visualize at first, the reason why it works is that this flowing exchange between space and time is constantly happening within every single atom and molecule of our visible universe. That means both of these realities are stable locations we can visit, and they are totally interconnected with each other. Neither of these two realities can exist separately. They are intimately and totally dependent upon each other for their own survival. It is utterly impossible to separate them. We can watch atoms and molecules winking into and out of this parallel reality all the time, but up until now, we have had no idea what we're really seeing. This also means the space we see is actually an illusion, and every point is ultimately the center of the universe. A parallel reality in time. Again, theoretically, this means everything you see around you has an energetic duplicate, not just your own body. In this parallel reality, your room would still look like your room. More precisely, your room would at least be the most obvious area you would see, because your room would be the closest point in time to the moment you entered into this parallel reality. You might also see dimmer, ghost-like images where your house didn't exist yet, because there was another building there. Or there was no building at all, just an open field. Under the right circumstances, you may even be able to see back into prehistoric times, where there were dinosaurs around. Or perhaps you see glorious hints of a crystal city that might be there in the future. Nonetheless, these would be like shadows or phantoms in some cases, and may be far too weak to even be visible. Another strange outcome of this theory is that simply walking around in this parallel reality will have an effect much like fast-forwarding or rewinding a videotape in terms of what you actually see. How can you know whether you will walk into the future or stroll into the past? You have to stretch your imagination even more to get the answer. But this does seem to be how the universe really works. If you stay perfectly still, when you go into this parallel reality, you won't travel in time. It's only when you start moving around that you either go into the future or the past. Let's be clear that even though you could walk around and explore things, no one here in our reality would be able to see you. Larson said that from our normal perspective on Earth, you would be stuck in space. From a quantum physics perspective, you would appear to have turned into a wave. If anyone could see you at all, you might look like the typical description of a ghost. Even though you are free to move around in this parallel universe, and you certainly can, all you're actually doing is moving around in time. Only motion in time can take place in the time region. That means moving from one location to another in this parallel reality is actually time travel. Time travel explained. However, saying you are totally stuck in space isn't strictly correct either. The evidence we will investigate in later chapters tells us that if you pop in at one point, walk to another location, and pop back out, you will indeed teleport between those two locations here on Earth. Even better, if you walked far enough in the parallel reality, you would have noticeably time-traveled when you return. This is called a time slip, and we will review solid evidence that vortexes naturally appear on Earth that can cause this to happen. Such vortex experiences are often misrepresented as UFO abductions with missing time. Skeptics have thrown a wealth of scientific data in the garbage because they just can't stretch their imagination far enough to recognize the truth. As we will see, even a decent walk in time-space won't typically buy you more than 5 days of travel through time, at least under typical circumstances. The distance you travel over there by walking doesn't really add up to a whole lot of time. How do you know which way you're going in time if all you're doing is walking around? Here's the secret. If you go ahead of where the Earth was when you got there, you will go into the future. If you go behind where the Earth was, you will go into the past. The trick, of course, is that the Earth is rotating on its axis and revolving around the Sun. The Sun, in turn, is revolving around the galaxy, and the galaxy is drifting toward the Virgo cluster. Thankfully, the laws of the universe don't leave us stranded out in our absolute position in space when we move into time-space. Even as we move forward and backward in time, we stay with the Earth. The Earth rotates from west to east, so that means if you head east, you will start seeing the future, and if you head west, you will start seeing the past. If you want to get really technical about it, you could say that you will see more of the future, or more of the past, since time is all spread out. Gravity is also pushing you down, and that's powering time as well. The flow of gravity is the flow of time, just like gravity is the flow that makes matter. Therefore, if you go up in time-space, you will move into the past, before the moment of time gravity had pushed you into when you started. If you go down, you will move into the future, after the moment of time gravity had pushed you into. The amount of time you shift through in these cases may not be very much, but in certain circumstances, the effects can be measured precisely.